The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Are we playing Sinatra, Come Fly With Me? I can't even hear it. Now, the reason I'm playing Come Fly With Me is that we have a storm just hit the Bay Area. Now, excuse me, I know you don't live in the San Francisco area as I do. And the first no-no of radio is not to talk about sex, politics, religion, or weather, which is what I do and what I make a living from. So I got to tell you, I'm thrilled because all of the globing warmists have said that the drought is a result of global warming and we're stuck in a drought and the reservoirs are drying up and the mafiosos who run the water department have already raised the rates. We just got hit with a winter storm that was unexpected. It's expected to drop 10 feet of snow. I'll repeat that, not 10 inches, but 10 feet of snow by the time these three storms come through the Bay Area. So I am happy. And I just let a fly out of my studio. For some reason, the flies appeared early this year. And there was one dragging his wings, and I said to him, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to kill you, fly. And I opened the door, and I let the fly out. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I like letting flies out of screens on rainy days. It's what makes life beautiful. Here's a couple of headlines. We will cover the primaries in Alabama and old Mississippi, where Romney is way ahead of Neuron, the vest, and the other guy, the fat one. I don't remember his name. I'll give you the results in a moment. But Neuron's basically out of it. The vest is basically in it. And, of course, Fatso won't get out of it. Oregon Lib editor had heart attack at woman's apartment, says the headline. It's a minor story, but there's some interesting blog comments that are sad. The longtime editorial page editor at the Oregonian in Portland was with a 23-year-old woman at her apartment when he went into cardiac arrest over the weekend, authority said. Robert Caldwell, age 63, was pronounced dead Saturday at a Portland hospital. Caldwell became unresponsive after a sex act at the woman's apartment, and she called 911, the Oregonian reported. According to Washington County Sheriff's deputies, the woman said she met Caldwell at Portland Community College about a year ago, and he had given her cash for books and other items in exchange for sex acts. The woman also told deputies that Caldwell, the editor, had not given her any money Saturday, and authorities decided against pursuing prostitution charges. He was married and had three daughters. Now, I'm not going to laugh about the guy's death. I mean, okay, he's dead. But you got to read some of the blog comments because they're hilarious. Some people are so mean. Listen to what they wrote. At least he died doing what he loved to do, which was to cheat on his wife and his family with a much younger woman. The next one says, the woman also told deputies that Caldwell had not given her any money Saturday, close quote. A blogger wrote, always get half the money in advance. I mean, it's crazy stuff that people are writing. But you see, people have no respect for the living nor the dead anymore. That's the truth. I mean, when Andrew Breitbart died, you heard what the slime on the left was saying, right? It's horrible. Others have said, this was a rude and unnecessary article. Did the newspaper have a grudge against the Oregonian for some reason? Another one wrote, and this guy was an editor of a major newspaper? And his readership should be embarrassed that they believe the word of his that reached print, pig. Another one wrote, well, a college prostitute who's smart would hide the money, crack pipes, cocaine, go through the victim's wallet, take any loose jewelry, take a shower, then tell police, I guess he came and went, officer. Anyway, not a big story. I'm just warming you up. There's so much corruption and so much, there's so many bad stories out there. You don't know which way to turn anymore. Obama has so degenerated the nation with his corruption and his cronyism that it seems that everybody's dipping into the till. Okay, you want to hear the results already? Alabama, Romney 32%. 5 p.m. Eastern Time, network exit show, Alabama tight, Romney takes Mississippi developing drudgery. Alabama, Romney 32%, Santorum 25%, Gingrich 23%, Neuron not apparent. Mississippi, Romney 33%, Gingrich 24%, Santorum 22%, Neuron not showing any sign of life. But Newt says that he's still in the picture. Play Oh Susanna for me to get the audience back in tune here. They didn't like any of those stories. That's what I want to hear.
Oh, I come from Alabama with my banjo on my knee. And I'm going to Louisiana, my true love for to see. Well, it rained all night today.
This was my favorite song as a youth. I used to like it, even though I grew up in the Bronx. I don't know how I came to like it, but I loved Oh Susanna. I used to sing it in the living room.
Go figure. For I've come from Alabama with my banjo on.
Do you know that a new study was done that I couldn't believe? The LA Times published it. They were just wringing their hands over this one. They said that 60% of Republicans in Alabama and Mississippi believe that Obama's a Muslim. They're just shocked over that. A man with the name Hussein, whose father was a Muslim, is a Muslim? Well, what do those crackers down there know? They're not smart like us on Sunset Boulevard. Why, he's been a Christian all his life in Reverend Wright's church.
Yeah, oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. For I'm going to Louisiana with my banjo on my knee.
Yay. All right. Here's the top story on MichaelSavage.com. This you're not going to believe. I've been saving this for the first few minutes because I know you're not going to believe it when I read it to you. The Longshoremen's Union, the U.S. International Longshoremen's Union, which is a division of the AFL-CIO, you know, those wonderful people, they just voted the premier of China the best friend of the American worker. That's right. You didn't hear this. I'll repeat this in case you missed this. The ILA, the International Longshoremen's Association, an AFL-CIO affiliate, has not publicized the award. But in Boston, I think just yesterday or just recently, they gave the Chinese ambassador to the United States the award on his behalf, on behalf of the Chinese premier, as the best friend of the American worker. It just shows you how far the unions have come. They used to be the just the backbone of America. The unions used to represent the heart and soul of America. Look what they become. Soldier held in Afghan killings was from a troubled U.S. base. Killings, suicides, assaults. And that's because they're redeploying these men over and over and over and over again. And then when they come home, they're being castigated by the vermin in the media. Obama's a Muslim to many GOP voters in Alabama and Mississippi. He says his Christian beliefs have guided his career. How many of you out there believe that Obama's Christian beliefs have guided his career? Raise your hands. Poll says Obama's a Muslim to many GOP voters in Alabama, Mississippi, and the LA Times is going crazy over it. Reporting from Washington, after years of battling false claims and viral emails alleging that he is a Muslim, President Obama hasn't gotten far among Republican voters in Alabama and Mississippi. Just shows you how stupid they are, huh? About half still believe he is Muslim. And about 1/4 believes his parents' interracial marriage should have been illegal, a new poll shows. The automated survey by Public Policy Polling, conducted over the weekend in advance of Tuesday's GOP primaries in both states, show that 52% said they believed Obama is a Muslim, 36% weren't sure, and only 12% said they believed he's a Christian. He fared slightly better in Alabama, where 45% said he's a Muslim, blah, blah, blah. Recalling his childhood, Obama said his family did not go to church every week, but he said his faith grew as he got older, and that his Christian beliefs have guided his career in public service. Well, I actually believe that, because the communist Christian beliefs of Reverend Wright are what he reflects. So in that sense, I don't think the president is distorting the truth. He found an even more radical set of beliefs in Reverend Wright's Christian church. What do you think? Every Christian is a patriot? You think every Christian is a capitalist? Where'd you get that idea from? Various anti-Obama activist groups have reportedly sought to perpetuate the myth that he is a secret Muslim. Well, let's start with the reality. They distort the article by saying Obama's the son of a white mother and a black father, but they leave out a black Muslim father. He's from Kenya. The father was a black man from Kenya and a Muslim. He's the son of a white mother and a black Muslim father. And by the way, according to Muslim law, it's a patrilineal descent. He's a Muslim, according to Muslim law. What church does he go to? Does this matter? Should this matter? Does it matter? Well, it matters because the LA Times says it matters, number one. And number two, they made a big issue of Mr. Romney's Mormon faith. I think that Mr. Obama's faith should become an issue this time, since it wasn't an issue the first time. But you know what? It doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, it's gas prices that will do it. That's the only thing that's going to do it. That's all that matters. And, of course, you see the slimy comments by the perverts in L.A., what they write. Those claims made by the folks in Alabama and Mississippi have no teeth. Mm-hmm. Someone wrote, whether Obama is a Christian or a Muslim is not important. Obama is a zealot of the Marxist religion. And the goal of the Marxist religion is to enslave and impoverish all people. Oh, yeah. What else is in the news? Well, let's see what else is in the news. We got the primary results. That's not too exciting. I'm going to go to my website and see what else is in the news. There was an article up there that I did want to mention to you. Where is it? Here. This is an amazing story. China warns of backlash if U.S. presses rare earths case. This is a great story that you should pay careful attention to. China owns 95% of all the precious minerals on the planet, right? And they are monopolizing them, as you would expect. So the U.S. plans to take Beijing to the World Trade Organization over its control of the special industrial minerals known as rare earths, right? The WTO. Now, as you well know, we opposed the WTO when it first came along. And the United States has been dragged through the WTO by China and by other nations over the years, unfairly in my opinion. But now that the U.S. is saying we're going to take China to the WTO, China is warning about a backlash and that it will sully bilateral relations. Now, the only people who would not benefit from such a move at the WTO would be Henry Kissinger, who lobbies for Chinese interests, Madam Halfbrain, whatever her name is, Halfbright, another one is a lobbyist for China's interests. The last I checked, Bob Dole was a lobbyist for Chinese interests. Do you know how many major American officials, both Republican and Democrat, have become lobbyists for China? Do you have the full list? Does the name Sox ring a bell to you? Remember old Sandy Berger, who was caught with state secrets and never prosecuted? Now, if you keep an overdue library book, you get arrested. But if you're caught robbing trade secrets or, excuse me, state secrets in your underwear and your socks and your name is whatever it is, Sandy Berger, what you do is you get appointed to the highest position in the land in the trade world, according to Obama. This is an important story because the fact of the matter is these rare earths are extremely important in the manufacturing of high-tech products such as cell phones, flat-screen panels, and advanced weapon systems. China controls 95% of the world's supply of rare earths, and they are now saying, well, we'll control them any way we want. You say, well, it's theirs. They can do what they want with them. Well, Beijing has now restricted new mining and introduced limits to production, moves that other countries are criticizing as a strategy to further dominate global supplies. What do you expect them to do? What do you expect them to do? That's what we should be doing with things that we control, if we controlled anything. But what do we still control at this point? Answer, nothing. 1-800-449-8255. China has undercut the pricing of rare earth minerals, by the way, wiping out similar mining interests in the rest of the world. I don't know if you know that. You see, there are other rare earth metal miners in other parts of the world. But the Chinese are so clever that they flooded the world's market with them in order to drive these other mining interests out of the business. And they did that because they do not enforce any environmental controls in the polluted nation of China. And the resulting pollution from these mines is one of the reasons that the Chinese government wants to limit the production and the export of rare earth metals in China. They're destroying their waters and their earths, by the way. I looked into this in great detail, but you don't know much about this. But what are these rare earth minerals? Well, they use in aerospace alloys, mercury vapor lights, carbon arc lights, fluorescent lamps, vanadium steel. I didn't say Canadian, I said vanadium steel. Computers, MRI imaging, camera lenses, battery electrodes, oil refining, even self-cleaning ovens. And so you can't really stop buying these items from China. You can't. You don't have an option. 1-800-449-8255. Someone wrote, don't turn your back on the Chinese from China. They'll put a knife in it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you could work
work for anybody else besides yourself, who would it be?
Yeah, I'd be a starting point guard for the Chicago Bulls. I think, you know, that ship has sailed. So that's probably not going to happen. But I wouldn't mind being on SportsCenter, you know, do the top 10 plays. Yeah.
So there's the President of the United States going on an unknown sportscaster show while eating, very classy, saying that he'd like to be a sportscaster. I highly recommend him for the job, by the way. He's got all the qualifications for that. China's trade deficit of $31.5 billion last month was its biggest ever recorded. Let me repeat that. China had a trade deficit of $31.5 billion in February, the biggest ever recorded. How about the unfair trade practices that Obama refuses to address, such as intellectual property theft and currency manipulation? Why is China allowed to get away with that? The answer is because they bought most of America's top policymakers. I'm sad to say, it's not something I'm proud to say, but it seems increasingly apparent to me that most of our so-called leaders are actually paid workers for foreign interests, or let's say paid lobbyists at the very least. Something's wrong with the picture. There are so many disastrous stories out there, I don't even want to bother you with them. So let's take the most egregious one, and that's the one about the vote in the United Nations, the UN, the United Nazi Body. The United Nazi Body had a vote in the UN Human Rights Council. The UN stands today for United Nazis. And it had a vote on women's rights around the world. They heard about Iranian human rights violations, including abuses against women, killing women, putting women in scarves, violating women at every turn. They heard about what they're doing to women in Syria, killing women. They heard about the genital mutilation in Muslim nations. Take a guess which nation was singled out as the worst for women on the planet by the United Nazi Organization. By a 29-2 vote, Israel was picked out as the worst nation on earth. Time to get the U.S. out of the U.N., don't you think?
Savage.
You know, last night I happened to be in Jackson, Mississippi. We had catfish and fried dill pickles, and we had hush puppies. And so, you know, you consider all these food groups pretty tasty, I have to admit. But I understand they're a bit fattening as well.
See, this is what we need in leadership right now: not discussing rare earths, not discussing the World Trade Organization, not discussing the atrocities in the Middle East, not discussing any of the disastrous policies that are destroying America, but talking about catfish and dill pickles. That's the kind of leadership America needs right now. It's unbelievable to me. Daryl in Mississippi, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Real honor, pleasure to speak with
you.
And I'm one of those dumb Mississippi crackers that didn't, I guess, was supposed to understand or believe or know that Obama's a Muslim, not a Christian.
Well, you're one of the toothless, uneducated people from Mississippi that the L.A. Times is mocking.
I know, but, you know, I was able to manage with all of my dumbness. I was able to get to the polls and go ahead and vote today for a proposed candidate of my choice. So,
Did you use a thumbprint, or were you able to actually check something?
I was actually able to check something. I really was.
You were able to fill in the box. The LA Times would assume you'd have to use a footprint.
It was tough, but you know, I after a little bit of studying, I figured it out today.
You mean you had someone teach you how to go to the polls and actually fill in the box, huh?
Not this time, Dr. Savage, but, you know, I was just kind of amazed today. I want to believe my hearing in my older age is getting bad, but I understood that Obama today dubbed the unfortunate incident in Afghanistan. No question about that, but he quoted today, I understand, the shootings over there as to be a terrorist act. But yet Fort Hood, I think about Fort Hood, and if I recall...
Oh, you mean where the Muslim Major Nadal Hassan is yet to be categorized as any event. It doesn't... In fact, you know, Daryl, you raise a good point. That didn't even happen, according to Obama.
Yeah, He called that workplace violence, if I recall, because we get our fair share in government of that kind of teaching.
Well, you see, I don't see how you could even remember those things and put two and two together like this. You're from Mississippi. According to the L.A. Times, you should not even have the ability to remember these things.
I think I'm smart enough because I don't read the Times. I think that's what gives me a little edge on most of them.
Guess what? Nobody reads the L.A. Times. I read it online. It used to be a fabulous newspaper until it was taken over by the you-know-whos in Hollywood. The Caesars of Hollywood have dominated that newspaper for many years. But you raise a very good point. What about the atrocity committed at Fort Hood by the Muslim major Nidal Hassan, who went on a shooting rampage screaming, Allah Akbar, and I killed 13 fellow soldiers, including a pregnant woman, wounded 32. How come he has never been brought to trial, Darrell?
I wonder that often. I try to stay up on these matters, and I don't understand it. You don't even hear it in the news anymore whatsoever. But
Well, the reason is simple. The U.S. Army knows that they're to blame because they let this loose cannon psychotic get away with this for over a year or two when he was signing on his medical reports, Allah be praised. Now, you know what would happen if someone wrote Jesus saves on one of his medical reports. He'd be thrown out of the Army within about 5 seconds. But he was writing Allah be praised on his medical reports for 2 years, and the Secretary of the Army did not throw him out because they're afraid of offending Muslims. That's one of the reasons that they're not covering the Major Nidal Hassan Fort Hood massacre case. The other reason is that Obama doesn't want the embarrassment of an association with a Muslim within the U.S. Army who committed an atrocity. You're right. It's a bigger case than the one in Afghanistan, and yet the U.S. press is not even covering it. You raise a very good point, Darrell. Now, I'm shocked that a man from Mississippi has the neuronic capability to remember all of these things.
You know, if I hadn't started listening to the Savage Nation, I probably wouldn't be as dumbed up as I am, I would assume, Dr. Savage.
Well, you know, I'm sending you a present, which is trickle-down tyranny. It's written especially for those with a low IQ, because as you well know, those with a high IQ wouldn't read a book like that. Only hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people with low IQs read it.
Well, thank you so much, and keep up the great job. I love it when you share scripture, and particularly in relation to end times involving Israel. And I love the stories about Teddy. I'm a number one dog lover, and I can listen all day about Teddy.
Isn't that something? Well, I'll tell you Teddy's story. Stay on the line so we can get you that book. Let's see, is there a new Teddy story? Here's a beautiful little 30-second Teddy vignette, just so you get a mind's picture, everybody. As I said, a storm just hit the San Francisco Bay Area, which I love. I love it for a number of reasons. The water table was very low. The ground was parched. We had a fairly early spring after a kind of winter drought. And we were going to have, the mafia that owns the water district was complaining already about raising prices. They raise it whether the water table goes up or down. They're much like the Chinese with rare earths in the Bay Area. Nevertheless, we get hit with a storm. On top of it all, it knocks the pollen down out of the trees, which is incredibly great for those of us who suffer from allergy. So on a rainy day, a dog is smart. What does a dog want to do on a rainy day? Curl up and listen to a radio show. So Teddy has been curled up next to my desk here, listening to the radio show ever since I began, and he's smart. He came out of the rain, and he stayed out of the rain. He doesn't know about Romney, never heard about Romney, never heard about Obama, doesn't know what a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim is, never heard of a nuclear bomb, never heard of Ahmadinejad, never heard about inflation, deflation, surflation, myflation, yourflation. All he knows is he's next to his friend Michael, listening to a good radio show. 1-800-449-8255, any topic is fair game. I'd rather not, I don't even want to use the O word anymore. It gets me a little upset, because the gasoline prices alone are probably going to sink this man's ability to be president. He can't control them because he doesn't want to. He wants the gas prices to go up. Here's another story from the Los Angeles Times. 10 commandments in school. Georgia House unanimously votes yes. Now, you know what that is to those in Hollywood, the 10 commandments. They do the opposite of the 10 commandments. Whatever the 10 commandments say, they do the opposite. All red meat is bad for you, new study says. Well, I'm not so sure of that, incidentally. And I'm not so sure that the study makes sense, incidentally. And I do have a PhD, partly in epidemiology and human nutrition. I myself don't eat much of it myself, and I hadn't for many years. And I would not recommend you eat red meat every day. But the fact of the matter is these kinds of studies are distorted in many different ways. And they're trying to push you into eating soy. Now, soy is helpful in reducing the risk of prostate cancer. In fact, I found an interesting epidemiological study on the two groups, let's say, Japanese in Japan, Japanese who have emigrated to America and have lived there and adopted the American diet, Chinese in China versus Chinese who live in America and eat the typical American diet, which is fat, rich, and rich in meat. And as you would expect, the indigenous Japanese in Japan have a much lower rate of prostate cancer, which is very important to men, while the Japanese who've come to America and taken on the Japanese, the American diet have a very high prostate cancer rate equal to that of the general population, same with the Chinese. So you say, well, therefore it proves that those who eat soy have a lower rate of prostate cancer strictly because they don't eat meat. It's not true. In other words, the facts are true, but the conclusion may be false. Secondly, I would caution you about eating too much soy-based proteins because soy is estrogenic, and that may not be good for you if you're a man unless you live in San Francisco or Los Angeles in certain districts. And so if you like eyeliner and you like putting on your wife's clothing, I would say that you should eat an awful lot of soy products because you're definitely going to have an estrogenic effect. So you have to understand there's a balance here at some point. And there is a relationship, no question, but I wouldn't rush to judgment on the red meat so quickly, incidentally. Secondly, there are benefits to red meat that are never discussed in terms of energy and ability to think clearly. People don't want to accept that because today red meat is the evil of all evils. But I'm going to give you one example. Red meat contains carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E. Carnitine is a very important energy-inducing component of red meat that's found nowhere else. That's why many people feel tremendously strong, a surge of energy after they eat a red meat. But, you know, don't tell that to the idiots at the Harvard School of Public Health who are now anti-red meat because red meat symbolizes perhaps America more than anything else. The Harvard researchers hypothesized that eating red meat would also be linked to an overall risk of death from any cause. And the results suggest they were right. Among the 37,000 men and 83,000 women who were tracked, as meat consumption increased, so did mortality risk. Well, how about other factors associated in the nations where meat consumption is high, such as watching CNN? Did they correct for watching CNN? I mean, maybe that increases your cancer risk. Or did they correct for driving an automobile? Maybe that increases your cancer risk. Or they correct for watching color TVs more than 2 hours a day. That would increase your cancer risk. I can go on and on. See, as a trained epidemiologist, you can't rush to judgment unless you include all of the factors in an individual's life, all of them that might be carcinogenic or cancer-inducing. And so far as I can tell, this is a rush to judgment. Again, though, having said that, I myself didn't eat red meat for well over 20 years. I reintroduced red meat into my diet a number of years ago, not to any great extent, and I don't believe that small amounts of red meat are bad for you. So the fact of the matter is these idiotic researchers are now saying there's no amount of red meat that's good for you. That is utter nonsense. Absolutely utter nonsense. However, if you're going to eat red meat, let me give you a tip. Cut out the processed red meats. You don't need the sulfites and the nitrites in particular. And it's not even the processed meats that are bad for you. It's the nitrites that are carcinogenic. Nitrites, nitrites, nitrites are the killer. I wrote about it in 1972 or 1973 in some of my early health books. It's been known for a very long time. So this is nothing new to me. But you've got a lot of people now jumping on this. But the fact of the matter is the mainstream media is absolutely wrong. What about Eskimos that lived long lives free of disease or the other hunter-gatherer tribes that lived or live on meat? In fact, the Inuits, if you want to call them Eskimos, I'll call them Inuits. The Inuits lived on whale and seal blubber. They hunted whales, they hunted seals. Well, of course, it's not red meat, it's fish, it's whale, it's a little different. But once the native peoples of Alaska and such were put on the refined diets of the United States, the lower 48, as it were, their rates of diabetes, their rates of heart disease went through the roof. There's another factor. What about the beef that they were looking at? Was it grass-fed beef or was it factory farm meat with hormones? Totally different story. What about the individual sugar consumption or smoking habits or processed oil consumption or all of the other factors involved? This is not a good story, and I believe that you shouldn't believe these stories, especially since it came out of Harvard. 1-800-449-8255. Let's take some calls. Jeff in Reno, Nevada. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I drive a truck for a living, and when 3 o'clock comes on, I'm listening to Michael Savage, because not only do I get history, not only do I get a smart man speaking on health, but I also get humor, which I love the stories you tell, like the other caller said. And you are a gem. Thank God for you.
Well, you see, you're the kind of people that don't read the L.A. Times. You're considered toothless and lacking in IQ. And so, therefore, you can't understand the subtleties of the L.A. Times, where they tell you that Obama is not a Muslim, or they tell you that red meat, all red meat is bad for you, you should never touch it. See, if you believed everything they said, you'd be a much more intelligent person, and then you, too, could go to rehab like the people who write the L.A. Times.
Correct. And my wife and I, from day one, saw right through this cat. We saw what he was all about, and I'm sure a lot of people did, but the young people, like...
You mean the cat in the White House?
Yeah.
The cat who crept into the White House?
No, he
hasn't fooled me from day one. This guy is one of the most obvious fraudsters I've ever seen in my life. Do you remember the first few... I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it. It's an image I can't get out of my mind. Do you remember when he was foisted into the presidency by George Soros? Shortly thereafter, when he climbed the steps on Air Force One, do you remember how tentatively he looked back like, are you kidding? This is mine now? Do you remember those pictures?
I remember that, and the way he salutes the officers coming off the plane bothers me, too. He does not have the respect for our country, and I'm so glad that you are on the ball with this. And,
well, the thing is, I could talk from today until Election Day, and it's not going to change the minds of those who see right through him. I am only hoping that enough people who don't really know what he's all about will get the message in time for my show and others. But, you know, I think that all the talk shows in the world are not going to make the biggest difference when comes Election Day. It's going to be gas prices, gas prices, gas prices, and it's going to be war in the Middle East. Only those factors are ultimately going to decide for the election, because, unfortunately, the Republican candidates are so tepid that it's frightening. They had every opportunity to win. We had the most unpopular, divisive, corrupt presidency in history, and they came along and cut each other's legs out. That is why we still have this primary going on, which leads many people to ask a simple question. Why aren't the GOP elites pushing to end the primary? Jeff, I'm sending you a free copy of If You Name It, You Gain It. What's the book?
Oh, it's Trickle-Down Tyranny.
You got it. You see, there's a smart man. I know that the people in L.A. can't remember it, because it's got three words and many syllables. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Overcome from Alabama.
Yes, Mike, we love your show out here. We only get it over in the barbershop where they pick up that Zionist station out of the main town, brings it in for us. We all go in that barber shop. We are that Zionist-owned station. So there was a fundraiser for wealthy Democrats, where the inimitable and genius Joe Biden addressed 87 wealthy Democrats last night, where he attended the fundraiser at the home of Senator John Kerry in Georgetown. They dined on, well, not grass-fed vegetables, but they dined on grass-fed New York strip steaks and white truffle mashed potatoes underneath an outdoor tent. And then they criticized Republicans for being out of touch. Old Joe Biden, the most honest man in Maryland, said, "These guys don't have a sense of the average folks out there," Biden said. "They don't know what it means to be middle class," as the 87 wealthy billionaires at Kerry's house cheered. The 87 guests paid a minimum of $10,000 per couple to attend the dinner. That's the truth. When's the last time you paid $10,000 for steak and potatoes? Well, I guess it means you're out of touch if you think that way. Nothing, nothing, nothing in Biden's life or Obama's life or work history has made them worthy of the job of president or vice president. Nothing. Nothing they have done since they have been put into the White House has made them worthy of keeping the jobs either. This is a shocking story for those of you who are shocked by it. But the fact of the matter is, everybody knows Biden is a fool and a liar, and that Obama, well, is about as hard left as any dictator in the world. We average idiots out here know who the extremists are. And the fact of the matter is, I pray to God that Romney doesn't blow it. Support the GOP candidate or support tyranny. And it may not be trickle-down tyranny, by the way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk about this or any other topic, it means you're a crank. It means that you're a crank, but I'd like to take your calls anyway. Sacramento, Hayden, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, love, Savage. First of all, let me start off by saying it's an amazing honor talking to you. Secondly,
Hayden, let me respond to that without being a wiseacre. You know, there's someone in radio who likes that kind of thing, and I think his name is Wallbanger. With me, you don't have to say it's an honor. Actually, for me, it's a pleasure, because without callers like you, I'd have no show. The guys who like to hear it's an honor are guys usually high school dropouts like Wallbanger or the Blimp. But anyway, what's on your mind?
Well, I had to start it out that way just because I spent the last 4 years of my education. I went to University of Oregon and got my degree in political science with a minor in business. And I spent the last 4 years being the only person in 300, you know, auditorium, 300 student classes, standing up, talking against, you know, just this liberal disease that you talk about every day on your show. And I just kind of wanted to give an example.
You, and what, and the commie professors didn't give you an F or ask the campus police to remove you?
Well, I mean, seriously, a study came out about 2 years ago, and it looked at the amount of registered Republicans and Democrats and independents at the University of Oregon professors. And it was found out that there was about 112 registered Democrat teachers, and a some odd amount of independents, and only 8 registered Republicans, and 7 of the 8 resided in the business school.
Well, why were they allowed to even be on campus, the registered Republicans? I think that the campus police should have had them arrested for even being a Republican in Oregon. It's the last I checked, it's illegal to be a Republican on a campus in Oregon.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Figured I'd play some heavy metal like the old days to wake you up out there. I think the country's gone to sleep. I don't know where they are. Where is everybody? I mean, admittedly, you're not that excited about the primaries in Alabama and Mississippi. I understand that. You're not that excited about Mitt Romney, who's not talking about any of the problems of the world, but about eating catfish. I can understand that as well. But there are major stories out there. I guess you're not interested in them either. So play a little more heavy metal for the audience as they think about calling 1-800-449-8255. How long can this go on? I feel like I'm living in the Soviet Union where there's endless elections in order to distract the people. Is this going to go on for the rest of my life, I think? Who do you think Romney's going to pick for the vice presidency? You want to really get excited today? Let's talk about that. Let's talk amongst our little selves. Here I have the third largest radio show in America, the second largest on the internet. Allegedly 10 million listeners. It's probably closer to 20 million if you added the internet, which doesn't seem to be counted. And Romney won't come on the show. Instead, he goes on shows and talks about catfish. So if you were to advise Mitt Romney as to who he should select for the vice presidency slot, who should it be? Should it be Rebecca Brooks from England? That would probably be a good pick, since nobody knows who she is. I mean, who should he pick? He certainly can't beat Biden again. I mean, Biden's taken. That's what I meant to say. Biden's taken by Obama. I don't think that Obama will even pick him again. But, let's face it. Biden brings the unions to Obama. That's the connection between those two. So who should Romney pick? My opinion, if it's worth anything, it has to be a conservative woman, someone to the right of him who is a woman. I don't think there are many, you know, candidates out there for that, but whatever happened to Sarah Palin? Well, the answer is quite simple. She decided to cash in her chips. She realized there's more money in the media than there is in politics, so she made the smart decision. Should it be, should the vice presidential candidate for Romney be Callista Gingrich? I mean, she is well known now. She hasn't said very much. She does play the tuba or something in a choir. That could bring in some votes from somewhere. I truly believe, no, why doesn't Romney pick someone like Callista Gingrich? Is it, that would be like a really weird pick, wouldn't it? Callista Gingrich, a Romney Gingrich ticket would really throw the libs for a loop. They would think it's Newt, but it's Callista. And he'd get the feminist vote, right? Because she's a woman. That's all I need. That's all I care about is if you're a woman. So I think that would make as good sense as any Romney Gingrich ticket with Callista as the VP. I don't know who else he can choose. Who else is out there? Don't say Condoleezza Rice. Whatever you do, please. No Condoleezza Rice. The last I checked, she was ice skating in Brazil. Oh, goodness. What else is there? You know, there's no, really is no news. Alabama, Mississippi, highway robbery, Dem transportation bill worth billions for companies owned by Soros. I don't know if you saw this on Drudge earlier. My head hit the roof. I said, how could the scandals get even bigger? And they do. You wake up every day, you say that this corrupt administration can't be even more corrupt tomorrow, and yet they top themselves. Highway bill amendment defeated that would have sent billions to Soros, Pickens, Douglas. It just happened, by the way, minutes ago. I can't believe it. We won. The Senate just killed legislation to spend billions of taxpayer dollars to encourage companies to use natural gas-powered vehicles. That's green again. The legislation also would have benefited wealthy backers of the Democrat measure, including George Soros and T. Boone Pickens. The amendment to the highway bill required 60 votes to pass was defeated 51-47. The measure was sponsored by the incredible, the honorable, the clean, the great Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat, New Jersey, that would distribute billions of dollars in subsidies to George Soros' entities in order to purchase natural gas vehicles and to build natural gas fueling stations. Can you believe this? How would they have funded it? A new tax on consumers that would have charged 2.5 cents per gallon of gas, natural gas, beginning in 2014 with another increase to 12.5 cents in 2021. Gas prices are already through the roof, and here they try to push natural gas vehicles in order to pay off their cronies, George Soros. Now, you would say this should be illegal. You should understand that some of these companies don't even exist. They were set up simply to cash in on the Natural Gas Act payday. How Democratic mega donors like Soros would have benefited from this without going to jail is something that puzzles me. But yet, our democratic system, as corrupt and as broken as it is, worked. The highway bill was just defeated that would have sent billions of dollars to this power-mad lunatic, George Soros, for whom no amount of money is enough. You know, that's what amazes me. That is what amazes me, which is he's one of the richest men on earth. He has more power than most sovereign nations. He's in his late 80s, and he wants more money and more power. This guy is as mad as the ancient Greek, as the ancient Roman Caesars. These guys are certifiably lunatic, as far as I'm concerned. Isn't there a point at which you say, I've got enough money or I've got enough power? What is that about the human psyche, I wonder? I mean, I'm really not like that. I got to tell you something. I'm not a particularly young man. Inside, I'm younger than I was at 30. But the fact is, I mean, I could work for more money. I could work for more power. I could give lectures and fly around and have crowds adore me. I don't do any of those things. You take a look at a guy like, I won't mention names. I call him the leprechaun out of fondness. The leprechaun leaves his show once a week on an average basis to fly to give a speech where he makes probably 70 to 100 grand a speech. All right, maybe he needs the money. I don't understand it. It's the smell of the grease paint and the roar of the crowd. Look what it did to Andrew Breitbart. there's a certain point at which you have to show some internal wisdom and pull back from all of these things, no? I mean, where's the wisdom here? How much power and how much money does a man need is what I'm asking. And isn't it a sign of mental illness to need so much money and power, need the adulation of crowds? Or am I missing something here? You know that I could cash in and capitalize more so than I do. You know that. I have a huge radio audience, but I don't seem to want to go beyond that. I write books. I want you to buy the books. I want to spread my ideas, but I don't really need the adulation. I don't need book signings. I don't need Mike, I love you. I don't need to go to the... Why don't I need that? Tell me why. Am I a better person or is there something wrong with me? Anyway, the big question is, who would you pick as a vice presidential running mate for Mitt Catfish Romney? I'm naming him Mitt Catfish Romney because he seems to like catfish. If you missed that soundbite, I'm not going to play it again. It isn't that big a deal. But who would you think would be his best running mate? I mean, look, the best would be Alan West. I'd vote for that team in 1 second. Alan West, Bo, you got to understand something about Alan West. I admire this man. I look up to this man. I had him in my house in Florida, his great wife and children. That doesn't mean I know him well, but I know him well enough to know that his service as a military man is enough to tell me he'd be the finest vice presidential candidate this country could ever have. But he is absolutely shunned by the Republican establishment. In fact, Alan West's Republican district in Florida was gerrymandered by the Republicans to make certain that he doesn't win again because he is a Tea Party favorite. That's right. The Republican establishment distrusts. In fact, he's radioactive to them. They want nothing to do with conservatives. He's considered a troublemaker. That's why he's never going to be picked. So who should he pick? Arizona, David, who should Romney pick as a VP?
It's going to be Marco Rubio. It's a political pick, sir, because he has to appeal to like McCain did with women, and he's not the white bread.
I agree. I don't think Rubio's the smartest guy out there, but he'd be a very good pick. Obviously, because he's Hispanic, and it would pull in a lot of Hispanic votes that are right now up for grabs, right? I mean, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's political. It's a political ploy, and he's a political guy, so he's going
to... Well, Rubio seems to be front and center everywhere. I think that he is going to be picked. Is that what you suspect?
Yes, I think so, too.
Yeah, but do you... let me ask you, though. Here's something I'm not sure about. Do you think even picking a Hispanic VP running mate would convince any of the hardcore left-wing, let's say the immigrant community, to put it that way, to go Republican? Do you think anything would make them move over?
It might. Some of my family might not agree with me, but it might get maybe about 20-30% more than they would, because...
So you think some folks of the same heritage in that regard, or I should really say in this case it's not the same heritage because he's Cuban, I would have to say of the same, people of the same, same culture. Would that be accurate? It's a very hard thing to determine, because if you say same race, that may not even be right. It's a tricky issue. But Rubio is Hispanic. Do you think there are Hispanics who are normally Democrat who would vote for Romney if there was a Hispanic VP? You say yes.
Yes, it would. It would. It would help. It would bump his numbers, yes.
You know what I don't understand? Hispanic families are typically very conservative socially. Isn't that true?
Yes, they are, but they're brainwashed into thinking that the Democrats are for the little man when all they are for is for themselves.
Well, you know, I grew up in an immigrant family myself. They were all Democrats, man. That's the same line I heard, by the way, when I was a child, David. Well, I was told by my father, I didn't know Democrat, Republican from a donkey or an elephant. And I would say to him, well, why are you a Democrat? He said, well, I don't know. He said, they seem to be more for the little guy while the Republican is for the big guy. I mean, does that still hold true when you see that Biden goes to a dinner that's $10,000 a plate at John Kerry's house and he talks about the fact that the Republicans are out of touch? Who would they think they're fooling?
Well, does that get reported, though, and does that get told? People don't know. They just see and they think and they get money. They go.
By the way, the richest people in Congress are Democrats, Nancy Pelosi. The richest people in Congress are Democrats. They're not Republicans. That's an interesting fact. And I don't think being rich necessarily means that you're bad, but it's a fact that should be told. David, I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation to take your calls. It is the Savage Nation, so he's going to win in Mississippi, a primary, and Alabama. It's a close race, blah, 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 and on it goes. Now, when I woke up this morning and I read the Drudge Report, and he had the article, Highway Robbery from Human Events, Dem Transportation Bill Worth Billions for Companies Owned by Soros, I said, it can't get worse than this. How much does the man need? Well, they just got defeated. Soros was just dealt a black eye by a strange coalition of people who oppose this, we used to call it pork barrel spending in my day. When I went to high school, we were taught that this kind of thing was called pork barrel spending. Today, it's not called that at all. It's called subsidies for the environment. But there he was again. He had his hands deep in it. Old Soros just got beaten. So that's good news. That's very good news. We can celebrate tonight. Everyone should have a beer because Soros was not able to steal billions of us through subsidies. Apparently, our corrupt, broken system worked in a very strange way, incidentally. New study says, by the CBO, the Obamacare estimate. Remember when old Obama, Barry, said that the legislation would cost around $900 billion over 10 years? When old Barry, who had no history whatsoever, ever having created a business, service, product that anybody ever wanted, except pushing papers around and putting up posters as a community organizer, he said it would cost about $900 billion over 10 years for Obamacare. Well, the CBO just came out and doubled the Obamacare estimate to $1.7 trillion over 10 years. Double what Obama, the community organizer, suggested. Mitt Romney, we don't know what VP he's going to pick. I think it's very important that he pick a conservative. We don't know who he's going to pick. I jokingly said he should pick Gingrich, Callista Gingrich, because after all, she's a woman, and that alone is, I guess, enough. He'll get all the musicians. Think of it that way. Think of how many musicians would vote for him if he picked Callista. Think of all the beauticians that would vote for Romney if he picked Callista. Think of all of the people who watch LMN on television. The LMN channel would like him because he picked Callista. Think of all of the glass ceiling women who would vote for Romney if he picked Callista Gingrich. She'd be a good choice. I'm not joking. I mean, actually, she'd be a pretty good choice. He could also pick. There is another choice. If he picks her, I'm leaving the country. I'll say right here and right now that if Romney picks McCain's daughter as a running mate for VP, I'm leaving America. I'll open up a rubber plantation in Cambodia rather than stay in this country because I'll know that there's no hope for this nation. I would say that McCain's daughter, who I've seen from time to time on television, I'm not so certain that woman dresses herself in the morning. I don't think she has the spatial capacity to understand how to unzip a dress from behind with her own hands. Because that requires some kind of spatial, you know, capacity. Let's say you put your hand behind your back and pull a zipper down. I would think with her backwards thinking, she's liable to try to zip up her dress while it's already zipped up. And zip down her dress when it's already zipped down. So I'm not sure that she would know how to dress herself in the morning. But that's what passes today for conservative women. There are some out there who are great conservative women, but unfortunately they're not in politics. They're either in the media in one way or the other or in the media. The only conservative women I can see, I'm talking publicly other than the voter, the only really conservative women are in the media. They're not even in politics. Can you name one political woman who's actually conservative now that you think about it? Is there a conservative woman that he could pick? I can't think of one, but I mean, he needs a conservative woman on the ticket. I don't know who it might be. And all of you, let me read the choices you're giving me. Santorum, Scott Walker, Duncan Hunter, Nikki Haley, South Carolina governor. Bolton, no, absolutely not. He can't win. Bolton's a very bright guy. I really like his politics. He's not an advantage. He's too dour, and he looks a bit like a seal. You know what I'm talking about? The UN ambassador Bolton, very bright guy, but he looks like a seal. He wouldn't bring anything to the ticket. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York.
Hey, Jilly, give me the Zuppa di Vongoli. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. the Zuppa di Vongoli. Every time I hear Frank Sinatra and I play New York, New York, all I can think about is the great Italian food, you know, on Mulberry Street that I remember as a kid. I haven't been there. Who knows what it's like today? Who knows? Whatever, anything is. Everything's changed. But I used to love the food down there. And you can't get Italian food outside of New York, except in Pittsburgh and Chicago. You have Italian food in San Francisco. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to knock my friends. They'll poison me the next time I go in. But it's so different than the... I can't explain it. The New York Italian food has a different connection to the old country than it does in the West. It's very different out here. It's good, but it's a little rarefied in the sense that it's been modified for California tastes, you know? And that's good and a bad in a certain way. But if you really want... The you know, that kind of food that I'm talking about, you got to go to certain places. I lived in Pittsburgh for a while. I was amazed at how good some of the restaurants were down there. But, you know, you get, well, maybe New Orleans probably here and there, and you know, but San Francisco is a very different scene. It's a whole different world. It's like everything else. Like the Jews of San Francisco, okay, you want to talk about the Jewish community of San Francisco? I know everyone just went, ooh, what's he going to say now, God? What's he going to say now? Well, it's sort of like an old Lenny Bruce joke. The Irish in New York are more Jewish than the Jews in San Francisco, and it's still true. There's no question. There's no question about it. Jews are like hidden in the San Francisco area, except for the Orthodox who still wear the 19th century garb from Poland. For some reason, they can't get rid of their grandfather's outfits. I don't understand that part of it. I don't know what wearing 19th century holiday garb from Poland has to do with being religious, but that's just the way I look at it. I mean, there's nothing sacred about a black coat and a black hat from Warsaw circa 1860. I don't quite understand that. They could have left it behind and sort of dressed as you know what I'm saying? What does that mean? If you love God, well, you have to dress like you're in Poland in the 1900s? Well, whatever. To each his own. As long as they don't harm me, you know, they don't kill people for their religion is good enough for me. But at this point, what I like to do, the reason I was playing New York, New York, is because the other day I was on a show that precedes me on WOR where former governor, right, Patterson? Remember Governor Patterson? He was the governor after Spitzer got thrown out for sexcapades. And Governor Patterson was lieutenant governor, became the governor, right? And then so now he's out of politics. So he's on WOR doing a talk show. And he's actually very humble in the sense that he says he's still learning the trade and the craft. And although he's a Democrat and although I'm not a Democrat, he listens to my show on a regular basis. I went on a show the other day to talk about the Breitbart death, right? And here's the interview.
Last week, the tragic and untimely death of Andrew Breitbart led to an assertion that perhaps he had been murdered because of revelations that would come out about President Obama. And he's on air talking about these revelations. But remember, he's talking about them as part of a, you know, his usual advertisement for his interviews and his exposures. But in this particular situation, because he tragically died in the interim, it was basically glorified so much by talk radio show hosts that he might have been murdered for this, that we were expecting a huge revelation. And what we got, from my point of view, was film of him around people who feel the same way he does. And Michael Savage's monologue on Thursday led to me doing a whole segment on it Friday. And Michael, I really appreciate your intellectual honesty, regardless of whether I agree with it or not.
Well, I don't expect you to agree with me. You're a Democrat, I'm an independent, but that's irrelevant. What's relevant here is reality. And when the tapes came out, I put out my show was there a beret-wearing Obama with an AK-47 in these hidden tapes of Breitbart? Answer, no. And I said, what did you expect him to do? He's a young black guy. He goes to Harvard, probably on affirmative action. We don't know. And who is he going to hang out with? Did you expect him to go to Hillel and put on a yarmulke and dance the hora? I mean, he didn't do any. I mean, he was with guys like himself. So what do you expect from 20 years ago, right?
Absolutely. And, of course, you're coming out with a book on April 3rd, Trickle Down Tyranny. And the whole thesis of Trickle Down Tyranny from when I listen to your show is that President Obama is bringing back a sort of oppressive system, in your view, that is denying opportunity, denying rights. It is redistributing wealth. It is taking people who are working and giving their money to people who aren't working. And a number of issues that, whether one agrees with you or not, could be very essential in this quadrennial referendum on who's going to be president and presumably whether or not there's going to be leadership in this country. And so the fact that he hung around with people who agree with him, what was the big story that we were supposed to get from it? I described it as I was waiting to find out that Obama had participated in the Brinks robbery with the Weather Underground and the Black Panthers.
Well, remember the famous New Yorker magazine cover before he was elected, which, strangely enough, for a liberal magazine, went overboard. And they showed him with an AK-47 and his wife, the lovely first lady, with, you know, an afro and guns. Remember that?
Yes,
and the
absolutely.
New Yorker was criticized. Well, I mean, what was the tape going to show, that he was screaming, "Bring down America"? He didn't do any of that. But my point is exactly what you're saying, which is, he is not a normal Democrat. You are a Democrat. You're a liberal. I don't believe President Obama is a liberal nor a Democrat. I believe the evidence is quite clear that he is a radical to the highest degree, and he has been all of his life. The difference is he's never changed his politics from the time he was a student at Harvard. For example, today, Governor, we just learned today that Obama blocks the Texas voter ID law. It's incomprehensible that a president would say to a sovereign state who wants to make sure that anyone who votes is a real citizen, "We're going to fight you." Now, why would he do that? The only logical conclusion is that he needs the illegal aliens to be reelected. You know, his poll numbers are collapsing, primarily, by the way, over his over the gasoline prices. You know that. But, you know, if you criticize the president, it better be based on fact, not upon hyperbole. And, you
well,
know, I knew Andrew. I mean, I knew Andrew. And I'm sorry. Go on. I didn't
No, I'm sorry. You go on. Come on, you have 16 years. You go first.
No. I knew Andrew Breitbart, but he and I, truthfully, God rest his soul, were on the outs. And that was because I felt he was going overboard on many issues. He was attacking too many people in a personal manner. And in fact, a year or two before, when we were still talking, I said, "Andrew, slow down. You've got a wife and four kids. Slow down. You don't have to do this." And I even said to him, "Andrew, you can't be everywhere at all times." I think he burnt himself out by running after the limelight, and this was the last straw for me, coming up with this hyperbole that the tapes were going to be a blockbuster. Well, as I said last week on WOR, apparently there was no block to bust.
So you've got the skyrocketing gas prices, a high unemployment rate, a stimulus package where the jobs only lasted a year. You've got a precipitant lack of wealth creation in the country, which you presume is the catalyst for job creation, and you've also got far more people out of work than even the Bureau of Labor Statistics show. So to me, when a president is in that situation, they are prime to be beaten, if there is actually a candidate that can get it together enough to do that. But beyond that, throwing in a bunch of things that are only going to seem to be piling on, insulting, and factually basically inaccurate is not going to be the way to change leadership in this country in November.
No, absolutely not. And I believe America deserves someone else. I mean, let's not go into the Republican candidates. I have my problems with them, as you probably know, as do many people who are jaundiced on the middle of the road approach they're taking. And there are so many real issues that we don't have to make them up. For example, we hear that the inflation rate is, what, 8.5, I don't know, 9%, what do they say it is? No, that's the unemployment rate. Do you know that this administration has removed gas, energy prices and food prices from the consumer price index in order to make sure that the numbers are lower than they actually are? If they were injected into the inflation rate, it would be much higher. I discussed this with Donald Trump. He said, "Yes, I'm aware of that." But how many Americans know this? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, number playing here. And
well,
the unemployment
bad enough that you claim the unemployment rate has remained the same at 8.3% last Friday, yet you claim there are 260,000 new jobs because now there are new people looking for work. Well, the unemployment rate should not be a reflection of how many people are looking for work. It's how many people are out of work. And that's why that number is always skewed and has been allowed by a number of administrations, actually, to stay there when it's not an accurate reflection of what's going on in the country.
look, many of these new jobs were with the government, and we don't want to become Cuba or the ex-Soviet Union where most people work for the government. That's another distortion. But we need a private sector jobs, manufacturing jobs. Everybody knows that. And I don't care who the elected leader is. They have to bring back manufacturing by imposing tariffs on China. I've said this for 2 years. Trump says it now for the last year. Anyone who understands what's going on understands no country can survive that's being eaten alive with cheap goods being dumped on their shore. That's why we're being hollowed out. So there are many ways to fix this other than by attacking President Obama, who's just simply creating federal jobs. Or frankly, these green jobs are a scam, in my opinion. Look at Solyndra.
One of the problems is that economically, nobody has funded green technology from Europe to the United States. Clean renewable energy is really based on the ability to heat hydrogen to a boiling point, but no one knows how to contain hydrogen. The best that's ever been done was right close to where you're broadcasting out in Berkeley, California, but they can only control 3% of it per day. So in other words, it's not developed to the extent where it is a profit-making industry, and I was a big advocate for it and director of energy as Lieutenant Governor under Governor Spitzer, I realized that it's not working right now. People are going more toward passive energy, you know, where if you build a house with walls thicker than 18 inches, it's like a barn. It's cool in the summer and warm in the winter. But let me just ask you this. On my just theory about what's wrong with talk radio, what I'm trying to present before you come on is an equal opportunity for an exchange of opinions and ideas, rather than a mantra that just gets to the point that it's stifling. Why do so many people in the industry, it's almost Pavlovian. If you hear one thing, the reaction will always be the same, cross the board, doesn't matter what station. And I'm amazed that the American people, and America was founded on the basis of individualism, wouldn't want to hear a different point of view now and then.
Well, they hear me and they know that I'm not predictable in many ways. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a left-winger, because I'm not. I was once a social worker, and I grew up. I mean, what politics I had when I was young are not the same as I have as a man. People change. But the fact of the matter is, if I just talk politics, I would have left radio 10 years ago. It's boring, boring, boring. Sure, politics are interesting, especially in a presidential year. But if I don't talk about having a Wendy's chicken burger in my car with my dog once in a while, I think my listeners...
We actually heard you talking to your dog before the interview here.
Well, it's funny. Today on WOR, Governor, I'm going to talk about going to Wendy's with my dog yesterday instead of having a power dinner with Shimon Peres. I wasn't given the opportunity, but I had more fun and a better meal in the Wendy's parking lot than I did in most restaurants. And you say, well, what does that have to do with the price of eggs? Everything and nothing. In other words, what is talk radio? You have to be entertained. You have to be entertaining. You have to be kind in your heart. You have to be uplifting in your heart, or people won't listen to you. What's the point? They have too many other options, and they're too busy, right?
Tell us a little bit about trickle-down tyranny.
Well, again, you're going to say maybe it's too political, but I truly believe that when you have an administration that is not a Democratic administration, but a radical administration, where poverty is rewarded, success is punished, our worst enemies are praised, but our allies seem to be ignored or stiffed, where the military is used as a pawn, where our borders are descending into chaos, where big corporations and cronies don't pay taxes in many cases and make off with all of the wealth, you have the equivalent of a socialist state emerging, where it's all top down and it all flows up to the top. And I believe trickle-down tyranny not only spells out the problems, but spells out what we can do to get a leader who is going to take us back to a center course. That's trickle-down tyranny.
Well, I was just wondering, is trickle-down theory, trickle-down tyranny in novel form like your last book?
No, this is the same format as trickle-up poverty. I stayed with the trickle theory, but I don't think we're going to use any more trickles unless it's trickle down your throat, and I'll write a book on wine. That's
okay, well, as we trickle into a break, I can't thank you enough. I know you're preparing for your show, but taking some time out and talking with us on the David Patterson Show.
You know, Governor, it's always a pleasure, and I hope we can do this more often.
Okay, great to talk to you.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. black magic has me in its spell.
Oh, black magic that you weave so well.
Those icy fingers up and down my spine.
The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine.
Is the mic on or off?
Same old tingle that I feel.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Oh, we got a special on Carnival Caribbean Cruises. It's about 90% off with Italian captains. It's 200% off they pay you. Welcome to the... What was it? Stacchino, get back on the ship. Stacchino, what are you... I could not believe this guy. Where is he today? That's like the Fort Hood Massacre, Captain Stacchino. It's not reported anymore. Special on a Carnival cruise. 90 or 100% off with an Italian captain is 200%. 200% off. They pay you $1,000 a night if you go on a ship with an Italian captain now, Carnival. But it's terrible. I mean, the Italian Navy used to be a great Navy. It was really good until Hitler took it over. I told a story about the Italian Navy. It's actually a true story. I mean, I'm a history buff. In World War II, the original Italian submarines were built with large conning towers, large enough for a dining table. I'm not making this up. Because an Italian figured if he's going to go under the sea for a long period of time, may as well eat, right? They made it big enough to seat 20 in the conning towers. And that all changed when the Germans took over Italy. Let's say when they became allies, and Hitler said, what are you, out of your mind? Nah, cut the conning towers off the Italian submarines. Check it out and see if I'm making it up. They cut the conning towers off the Italian submarines to make them more efficient like the German submarines, and that was the end of dining on Italian submarines. Now, I don't know whether Captain Scatino's father served in the Italian Navy or not, but the fact of the matter is, good luck to him. Let's go to the callers in New York on WOR. Robert, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, Michael Savage and the governor. What a great programming. I mean, just...
What did you... I just listened to it again. I thought it was a good harmony. What did you like about it?
Well, I'm a fan of both you and the governor here in New York.
Good.
And you for years, and he just, you know, for the, about a year that he's been on the radio. To have two intelligent people discuss something and disagree without yelling and screaming and
well, you see, but there's a reason for that. The governor is a Democrat, not a radical. Obama is not a Democrat. He's a radical. He's destroyed his own party. I have a prediction that if things keep going the way they are, even middle of the road, Romney will beat him by 20 points. It'll be a washout. And I believe the Democrats are going to lose for 20 years after what the Obama administration has done to this country. Even mainstream Democrats don't like him.
Well, you know, politics being what it is, right, left, up, down.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is to have two human beings to be able to...
Well, that's. I think what you heard was the humanity between two guys who could disagree. I mean, he's a Democrat. I'm a conservative independent. Get along without any anger is a very big deal. I agree with you.
You can go to dinner. You know, you can go have a...
Well, you know, but Robert, here's the thing. You got to understand something. We're older guys, and we, even though I'm older than he is, I didn't really know how much older I was, but I am older. I grew up in New York when his father, Basil Paterson, was a very big, powerful force in the Democrat Party. And I came from a family that voted Democrat because we were all immigrants. They were immigrants, rather. And I didn't know any different. To me, if you said Republican, I thought of a tall guy in check pants who played golf. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, you know, an average person in those days was a Democrat. I think that the conceptualization that Democrats can be very rich, like John Kerry, is something that has not yet sunk into the consciousness. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation to talk about this and other topics. Stay tuned.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The American Republic will endure until the day Congress discovers that it can bribe the public with the public's money. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. And that's the exact road that we're on right here, because all President Obama is doing, instead of coming up with a viable solution for job creation in the United States, he's just seeking to bribe the American public.
Here are some of the stories on the Savage Nation today, up on michaelsavage.com. From the Atlantic, why aren't GOP elites pushing to end the primary? Well, I've been asking about that for a long while now. Well, apparently there are three reasons. Gingrich, Santorum, and Paul are fighting it. Romney's not really the establishment candidate. They're trying to make him into something else, and they're terrified of antagonizing the base. That's why they're liable to lose to the worst president in American history. Pelosi is Congress's most unpopular leader. Everybody knows who she is. Everybody knows who she is. Here's the worst story of your life. The UN, the United Nazis, had a meeting about women's rights around the world. They picked the country that is worst to women than any other country on earth. Not Iran, where women are stoned to death. Not Syria, where women have been killed. But Israel. 29-2 vote, with the United States and Israel alone opposing it. The fascistic Arab nations, introduced by the fascistic Algeria, on behalf of Arab fascists, have attacked Israel again. I'm getting sick of this. I'm sick of it. I want the United States out of the UN. How would you relate to that one? How would you like that one? No condemnation of Iran, no condemnation of Syria or the other throwback Muslim nations, only Israel? It's unbelievable to me. And you know who abstained? Belgium, Colombia, the drug nation, Germany, Italy, Japan, Niger, Republic of Korea, and Sweden. The world is going into the hands of the Arab Mufti. Obama under fire for being generally proud of the troops. He was a little cautious in that.
This has been an enormous strain for a decade now on our men and women in uniform. And obviously what happened this weekend was absolutely tragic and heartbreaking. But when you look at what hundreds of thousands of our military personnel have achieved under enormous strain, you can't help but be proud generally. And I think it's important for us just to make sure that we are not in Afghanistan longer than we need to be.
Israel punishes ex-spy chief over Iran. Well, that's interesting. That's the one who was on 60 Minutes. Also on michaelsavage.com, the former Mossad head advocates Saudi peace plan. This is amazing, this story. I still don't know what's behind it. New study finds Obama's regulations cost $46 billion a year. Biden says Obama would have been a one-term president if Bin Laden mission had failed. Mr. Biden, check the gas pump. The average person could care less about Bin Laden. They care more about the gasoline prices. What other stories made it up to michaelsavage.com? Well, for one, I'll do it for you if you're too lazy to go there. You want to leave me in the lurch? Okay. Top right. Soldier held in Afghan killings was from troubled U.S. base. Killings, suicides, assaults. These boys are being deployed to death and then cursed when they come home. China owns 95% of the world's supply of rare earth minerals. And they are, frankly, using it as a monopoly. They're now warning the United States that if they take it to the World Trade Organization, which they've done many times, there will be a backlash from the evil Chinese Empire. Here's a shocker to everyone at the New York Times. Obama's a Muslim to many GOP voters in Alabama and Mississippi. Duh. Hussein is a Muslim? CBS News, leftist, of course, says that Obama's approval rating sinks to a new low. And old Soros. No amount of money is enough for this wonderful, wonderful human being. There's a new highway bill worth billions and billions of dollars about to be voted on by the Democrat Socialist Gangster Party. Guess who's going to get it? Company owned by Soros and others. former CAIR official running for president of Egypt, and he pledges to complete the implementation of Islamic law, while the phony CARE organization says they're not interested in Sharia law in here in America. New Egypt Parliament declares Israel the number one enemy. Thank you, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and the other members of the Mufti Party. White House says that raising taxes on oil companies will not cut gas prices, but will increase fairness. Pink slime good for school kids, says manufacturer. Casino king in fight with backers from Japan hires Navy SEALs to protect him. Oh, you got to read that story. That you got to read. That you got to read. It's an interesting story. Even lib pollsters show Obama sinking due to high gas prices. San Fran justice. Sheriff pleads guilty. Remains sheriff. He allegedly inflicted a bruise on his wife's arm. Do as I say, not as I do. Obama blocks Texas voter ID law, needs illegals to stay in power. Who does he represent? Mexico. Many teachers say their career has failed. How about fire department and police department pensionaire schemes? Here's a guy, a captain, living on $109,000 a year full disability because apparently he twisted an ankle in his last few days of work. Tax-free. $109,000 a year as an FDNY. Retires and takes a new $100,000 job as a fire chief. But he says there's no physical work involved. The scam by police and firemen have to stop. These scams have to stop. Finally, on the bottom left of michaelsavage.com, high soy diet reduces risk of prostate cancer. That's very interesting. There are some negatives to soy. Estrogenic effects. It might have you grow breasts and a long hair, whatever. I don't know. But the thing is at least you won't get prostate cancer. See, there's always a trade-off, but no one will tell you that. All this and more. All this and more right here on The Savage Nation.
This has been an enormous strain for a decade now on our men and women in uniform. And obviously what happened this weekend was absolutely tragic and heartbreaking. But when you look at what hundreds of thousands of our military personnel have achieved under enormous strain, you can't help but be proud generally. And I think it's important for us just to make sure that we are not in Afghanistan longer than we need to be.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with. The ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage.
You got to laugh at some mild infirmities. You know, a guy gets in a fight when he's a kid. He gets a tooth knocked out. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. It's a tooth. That's all. That's all. It's only a tooth. It's nothing. It could have been worse. Because I remember when I was a kid, like 18, 15, you know, I never thought I'd live past 40. I really didn't. Come from a family of horrendous male longevity. I don't blame them. It was just the way it is. So my friends and I used to joke. We used to joke when we were kids. We'd look at older men, guys over 30. Some of whom were bald. And I remember saying to my friend, and I said, you know what, I'm not worried about baldness because I'll probably never live that long. And we used to joke about it. I swear, young guys are funny. We always had a fatalistic view of things. But as time, and there was another story I'll tell you from that era. I remember I told you I had a friend whose father was the tough guy in the whole like thing in the ghetto. All the other guys had little stores or little jobs. This guy owned a bar on the Upper East Side of Manhattan before it was cool. He was a professional bar owner, wearing a suit, not a bartender, a gambler. He was a real, you know, let's say, cool type of guy. But he was a man's man. So naturally, the boys would gravitate to the toughest of the men, because boys will. Boys will always be drawn to the tough guy. I didn't say nasty, I didn't say evil, but the toughest man is usually the tribal leader anyway. So guys liked him. He had a manly way about him. He talked quietly, never spoke loud, hardly spoke at all. And sometimes when the families would get together in those days, all the families got very often got together on weekends in someone's apartment or house, he would sit down, and the guys would listen to him. And remember, he said to us, he would say things. He would say, you know, he says, you know, when you hit this certain age, like at 50, and your teeth start to fall out, and your eyes are, you know, not as good as they were. He says, I don't want to live past 50. I hear the guy's 95 now, living in Florida. Because the truth is that as you get older, no one wants to die. You keep moving the goalposts. That's the absolute reality. Now, somebody once said living well is the best revenge. Now, what living well means is up to you. To me, it's a few people I can talk to and have a meal with, which is very rare in this world. So last night, I got to tell you, as I told you I would, a man in the street story. I go up to North Beach Restaurant. Lorenzo had been away for 10 days. And I brought Teddy in. Teddy likes to dine on Italian food. And I go up there and I said, look, I don't want any fish. I don't want any pasta. I want meat tonight. So he says, why don't you have scotodito? I said, what's scotodito? I don't speak Italian. He says, scotodito, it means you'll burn your finger. I said, what? I don't want to burn my finger. He said, no. Scotodito means lamb chops. That's how we used to say it in Italy. He said, scotodito. So I said, okay, then give me some hot lamb chops. So I ate these greatest lamb chops. Teddy scoffed down some veal at Lorenzo. Lorenzo just lost one of his dogs, and he was heartbroken, so he likes Teddy more than ever. And he gave him some veal. And we had a nice time. And I'm leading up to some wine here, some wine story. I bring in a bottle of my own because I had been drinking earlier the night before New Zealand wine. I happen to like wine. When I drink wine at all, I like New Zealand from Marlboro, the Sauvignon Blanc from Marlboro in New Zealand, right? And it's a little bit of an affront to Lorenzo because he has his own, vineyard. I understand that. But it's all right. He's a big guy. So he drank the wine. And he said to me, the first thing that you smell when you drink it, well, I don't know, you want to hear more about wine? Because his grandfather taught him in Italy how to taste wine when he was 6 years old. Here's what his grandfather said. He said, Lorenzo, you take a small sip of wine. You put it on your tongue. Don't move anything. Count to eight and let it go down from the side of your mouth into your throat. And then he said, as a young kid, he choked almost to death from it. He said, when he did it, though, I experienced it because the side of your mouth is the most delicate part of your throat. I experienced something incredible. Something incredible because it goes all the way into your throat and the side of your mouth. My grandfather used to say, you know, when you do that, it takes the pants off the wine and you really see what is there. I love the florid language of old Italy. So I'm going to give you a little more of the florid language of old Italy. You ready for more? Here's some more. They had a lot of troubles in Italy after the war. So he says his grandfather told him when he was a little boy in Italy, when they had nothing but trouble because the Nazis had occupied Italy, by the way, his grandfather said to him, everyone has a cross to bear, but lucky is the one that can keep the cross in his pocket. That struck me as such a brilliant statement to remember. I love that one, so I made a note of it. And then we talked about olive oil and this and that. I'm not going to bore you with that, but here's the end of the story because it was very funny. I ate the meal. Teddy had his meal. We had a lot of fun talking. I drank some wine. I go outside. It turned very cold. It was like 50 degrees, 51 degrees. The wind was blowing, which I love. I had my overcoat and hat on. And just guys, you know, BSing in the street waiting to get back in the car. Incidentally, someone drives me when I drink. You just should know that in case you want to send a letter to somebody. And then a man comes around the corner, an Iranian man. He's a Persian. He owns a Persian restaurant around the corner. I've seen the restaurant for 30 years. I've not gone in it. It's always been known as a upscale, you know, Persian restaurant. But I never went in it. So he says to me, did I tell you a story? He says, I know who you are. He says, you're a legend in this city. And he says to me, I said, thank you very much. I said, well, your restaurant is a legend. We exchange pleasantries. So he said to me, did I ever tell you? Now, remember, he's a Muslim. So he says to me, did I ever tell you the story that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death? Well, we all broke into phenomenal laughter. I said, that's the funniest thing I ever heard. He was, of course, referring to the days of the Jewish holidays when Jewish people generally don't go to restaurants. So here is a Muslim guy who owns a Persian restaurant. He says, we have a saying in the restaurant business that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death. I said, I got to say that on the radio tomorrow. He says, no. He says, you can't say it because you're not Muslim. He says, people will take offense. He says, let me say it. I can't imagine a Muslim would take offense at something that's funny. I mean, it's a good-natured joke, isn't it? Or did that offend somebody? Maybe you can call the ACLU because I told you a joke. San Luis Obispo, Robbie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I hear you talk about olive oil. I'm an old retired surgeon who makes olive oil in California, and I know you like Spanish oil, but there are some pretty spectacular California olive oils that are really, really extra virgin.
Oh, I almost drink it. I use a California or extra virgin olive oil because it's about the only certified organic oil that's reliably organic.
Yeah, we really police ourselves. The California Olive Oil Council, we have the highest standards in the world for the certification as extra virgin. And one
I really believe me, I'm an olive oil fanatic, and I do love. Yes, I like Spanish olive oil, but the fact of the matter is, there are trees here in California that are not quite 1,000 years old, but they're some phenomenally old trees. And the if they're new trees, they're made from cuttings from Spanish cuttings, weren't they? Some of them.
Some of them, yes.
But, yes, and the reason I like Spanish olive oil in general is because it's a lower acid oil. Am I correct in that?
It is, but we make a very unique varietal from Italy that's also very, very low in acidity. And one of these days, I'd love to get you to try it.
Let me ask you something. My friend Lorenzo of North Beach Restaurant has a vineyard. I was there when he cut down the trees and put in it. So I asked him why his oil is amazing from his vineyard up. You probably are familiar with it, Petroni oil. So I said, well, what are your olive trees from? He said, the cuttings are from Tuscany, and they're a mixture of, listen to this, Lacino, Pendolino, Moraiolo, Coratina, and Frantoio, which he says is the classical Tuscan blend. Does that make sense to you?
Those are the traditional Tuscans. Almost every Tuscan blend that you'll buy in California are from those trees.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back. You know, I know more about freedom of speech than anybody in talk radio. You know that I've been attacked by the illegitimate in the American government in cohorts with their socialist, liberal, fascist friends in the British government. I'm banned from that country. This week, Rush Limbaugh got attacked, and I might mention he did not come to my defense when I was banned from the UK. But that doesn't matter, because I will talk about the bigger issue than Rush Limbaugh. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this is lawyer and columnist Mark Randazza. Mark Randazza, you're a First Amendment attorney. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to talk to you.
Why do comments such as these get ignored when vermin on the left state them?
Well, I think you have a different political element on the left. I think both sides try to do what they can in order to capitalize on impolitic remarks by either team. I really think it's, the political debate has descended in a lot of quarters from whether you can score cheap points on somebody rather than whether you can win the battle of ideas.
Do you think this is a concerted attack on freedom of speech by the left-wing media, as we all do?
No, I don't. I think it's simply the way that the game is unfortunately played. I think that when the right has something that it doesn't like, it likes to harp on fake issues just as much as the left. The left's fake issues just happen to be different. If the left can perceive any offense toward women or minorities, it will jump on that rather than actually making its points in the marketplace of ideas. I don't think that the enemies of free speech are any greater on the left or the right. What I think is dangerous is if you believe in free expression to only look over your left or your right shoulder.
Well, don't you think this has very little to do with what was actually said by Limbaugh, or just an attack on views that differ from the strident, impossible, fascistic, increasingly leftist vermin?
That's clearly what it is. It is people who don't like Rush Limbaugh's views, and I am one of them. I despise his views, but I feel confident debating his views. I feel confident opposing them with my own substantive views. This, on the other hand, is simply a distraction. It is a way to distract from engaging him on his views and just to attack him over some impolitic words.
Look, I've been banned for 3 years now from entering Great Britain. And I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. My listeners have been contributing to the Savage Legal Fund, and I wish they would continue to do so, so I'm not stuck here alone. But I have not been given any opportunity to vindicate myself. Why do you think the major media continues to ignore my situation?
Well, it might be because the major media in this country, a left or a right-wing problem. I mean, I think the major media in this country is more controlled by right-wing interests than left-wing interests, but more importantly, it's controlled by business interests. And if you've got the major media outlets owned by major corporations, what do they care about liberty? What do they care about freedom of expression? They don't want that. They want people that they can lobby to be in control of what messages get out there. You know, that's probably the main reason that nobody cares that much. But also, you know, this is happening in Great Britain. We fought a revolution against them because we wanted our Bill of Rights. And thank goodness we won. At least in this country so far, you can't be banned from the air simply because somebody in the government doesn't like what you have to say. You know, unless, God forbid, it touches on sexual issues, and then all of a sudden all the rights go out the window because we're such an erotophobic country. But other than that, you can say any view you want on the air, and it's not going to get you legally banned.
Isn't freedom of speech in this country becoming an illusion?
Well, I don't want to say becoming, because there have always been problems with the operation of the First Amendment. There have always been those who want to censor others because they don't like their views. You go all the way back to, I mean, heck, the early in the country's history, you had the Sedition Acts, which if you said something bad about a member of the government, you could go to jail. I mean, the country was founded on really some of the principles that came out of the Zenger trial. You go back to the 1930s, and James Joyce's novels were banned. So I don't think it's necessarily getting, the First Amendment is under more attack. It's constantly under attack. It has historically always been under attack. And I think freedom of expression had a high water mark, probably under the Brennan Court. And I think under our recent court, I think free speech has been rolled back. I think you have more people willing to shut other people up. You know, back when we had an enemy like the Soviet Union, it was kind of easy to say, look, there's the bad guys. They don't allow freedom of speech. We're the good guys. We allow that. It gave us a little bit of a moral compass. And I think we've lost that now that we don't have a monolithic enemy and you have people on both sides of the aisle who are terribly unfriendly to free expression. And, because they see it as a good opportunity to take shots at the people who they disagree with. And, you know, when you look at somebody who you disagree with, you look at, think of the most vile speech you can think of, whether it's the Communist Party, whether it's the Westboro Baptist Church, whether it's the Ku Klux Klan, whether it's, Gloria Steinem, whether it's Gayle Dines, whether it's anybody. Just think of the speech that repulses you the most. That's the speech that you should protect the hardest. That's the speech that you should stand up and say, I despise this guy behind me, but I'm not going to let this cherished principle of free expression suffer because of that. My views are strong enough that they can stand in opposition to his, and I don't need to cheat by getting the government on my side to try to censor him. And I don't need to engage in the ignoble exercise of trying to shout them down and remove them from the marketplace of ideas because I have a lot of people organized with me. I'm louder. I'm richer. That's wrong. The remedy for speech that you don't like is more debate on the merits, not the removal of the debate.
Well, of course the left wants to destroy conservative talk radio because the people love it.
I think the left would like to destroy conservative talk radio because conservative talk radio has shown itself to be an incredibly powerful tool for organizing people on the right who are of like mind. And the left has not been able to duplicate that success. I think that if Air America had been as successful as the collective right-wing talk radio, I think you'd find people on the right trying to do the same thing. But you know, each side tries to cheat, and each side tries to cut at the tools that the other side has effectively used against the other. And I really think that's too bad. What I really find to be a shame is there are very few people on either side who will say, look, here's the common ground, because as Americans, we are not all the same in any other way. You know, I was in Hawaii a few months ago, and I'm meeting with a guy who's a former state representative who's a native Hawaiian. He has nothing ethnically in common with me, who is the kid of Sicilian immigrants, who grew up in Massachusetts. We have nothing geographically in common with each other. Culturally, this country is very diverse. The only thing that we really have in common is this idea of what America is. And the idea, the crown jewel in that idea, is our commitment to free expression. And if both sides could look at each other and say, this place, we all agree. This place, we will not mark it up with our bombs and our slings and arrows. We will say that this is our common ground. If the people on the left and on the right could get over themselves for a moment and just say that that is the one thing that defines us, our Bill of Rights is the one thing that makes us different than the rest of the world, and then fight over everything else, we'd have a better country. Unfortunately, we don't. Unfortunately, right now, the polemic discussion is always anybody would be willing, left or right, to destroy the rights of the other, and in doing so, cause collateral damage to their own rights just to win cheap political points. And boy, does it disgust me as somebody who has devoted my life to protecting free expression. That's, to me, I don't care which side wins. As long as that is there, then the debate can go back and forth and the pendulum can swing politically from side to side, but we will always remain America.
Mark Rondazza, thanks for joining us today and good luck on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The United Nations, a key commission wrapping up its work this week, issuing a strong condemnation against one country for violating the rights of women. Syria? Try again. Iran? Not so much. The group accused Israel of, quote, systemic violations of the human rights of Palestinian women.
Israel is the country the United Nations loves to hate. And the problem with it is if you look at the hypocrisy of the United Nations, here's Iran, a country which still stones women. You look at other countries
well,
which
I
behead
mean, they
women.
They were being unfaithful, Katie. I mean, this is the logic
it's
that they employ.
It's crazy now, but I think it's a bigger problem than this. Why? Because we're a crisis is brewing in the Middle East. A crisis is brewing potentially between Iran and Israel and the countries of the Persian Gulf region. And what you're seeing is a systematic approach by the United Nations to isolate Israel even more than it has in the past.
I'll take your calls on these or any other topics. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Sacramento, California. K-Mal, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I've been a longtime listener of your show, sir, for the last 7 years now. And
thank you.
I want to make a comment about Herman Cain because I am black, I'm a conservative, and I'm a Christian. I grew up around people like Herman Cain, and when I see these vicious attacks by the white liberals coming out of him, it just makes me cringe. But let me tell you something. There is some hope, though. There is some hope in the fact that he's rolling on.
But don't you agree the reason he hasn't cracked from all of this, all of these lies, is because he has faith in God and a loving wife who he really does love? I think that's why he's able to go on.
You're absolutely correct, Dr. Savage, and he's going to keep going on. And I have some hope that he can win. The other folks are done. They're through and finished, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I would say Perry is finished. Romney is looking very, very much stronger every day because Romney's playing the presidential role. He's not attacked Cain when he was given the bait yesterday by the lowlifes from CNBC. He wouldn't take the bait. And so Romney's looking very good. But the Tea Party people, meaning the real conservatives in America, are really not enamored of Romney. But let's go back to Mr. Cain. You agree with me that they're after him, one, because he's a conservative, two, because he's black, and three, because he's a true Christian. Wouldn't you say those are the three reasons?
Dr. Savage, you're absolutely right, because when I was going to school in about 15, 20 years ago in high school and college, I've been around these white liberals, and People have called me and said I'm an Oreo cookie and tell me that I'm black on the outside and white on the inside. It's just absolutely.
But you see how you're laughing because you have a good sense of humor. You never let it get to you. You don't have the same nasty nature as some of the race hustlers out there who most of us detest. And you had to overcome all of that hazing from your own people, let alone white people who may not have liked you.
Oh, I've got it from both sides, sir. Both sides.
Yeah. Did you hear the caller yesterday who said Herman Cain is not a real black man because he's like a white man? Did you hear that caller by any chance?
I've heard many calls like that, sir.
I could not believe what she was saying. I was saying, what, you mean he has to be an angry, screaming, threatening race hustler to be a real black? That's what I said to her.
He doesn't act like the hustler in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama, who's an absolute, he's just an absolute Trojan horse.
I agree. You talk about a man who's hustled his whole life using the race card. It's Barry Obama.
You're absolutely right. And when he hung around people like Dr. Cornel West and Louis Farrakhan, Jeremiah Wright, who are all race hustlers in a high Jesse.
Yeah, Cornel West is like a grade Z mentality who has gotten by with his threats, his intimidation, and that whole buck tooth thing, you know, always doing that tooth thing on everybody and that yelling and that screaming and scaring the white liberals at Harvard. That guy's a Harvard professor like my poodle is.
You're absolutely right.
That's some Harvard professor. All he does is threaten everybody, and every day he's held up as some role model. No, he's not my kind of candidate, by the way, and I mean a candidate for academic distinction.
Right.
Listen, my friend, we are living through very, very strange times, and all I can offer you is what I have written with One From the Heart, Abuse of Power, my thriller. I'm going to send it out to you right now because I hear that the first printing is almost gone. And I really am telling you, if you're going to buy one for the holidays, you're waiting. I know money is tight. You should do it in the next couple of days, I would think. I don't know if they're going to get a second printing out in time. And you're going to want to have the first printing. Because the first printing of Abuse of Power, just think about what that's going to be worth on eBay in the third millennium. Just think about what it's going to be worth in the year 3000. if the paper and the ink are still standing. I'm feeling a little giddy today, and I tell you why. I'm following up with yesterday. I can't go into it in total detail. My agent called me, and he said, they're so in love with you, the publishers are so in love with you, they're begging me to send anything that you have for your next book. So I got to tell you something. I know I'm prolific. I know I've been writing all of my life. I went into another storage bin just yesterday, and I found 10 new novellas that I had written during my lean years when I was still trying to be discovered, long before radio, while I was struggling as a corporate consultant and as a nutrition writer. I was writing amazing things. I couldn't believe it. I can't believe it. I guess I have to tell you how excited I am to find my own work. And so instead of writing something new, I'm going to tell my agent, look, I want to write, I really want to publish the unpublished works of Michael Savage in one volume. They're astounding. Some of them are amazing. I can't. Should I read you the titles? I know many of you would like to hear it. But I'm afraid if I do, someone will steal the titles. Because I'm a genius at titles, and I can't just give them away. I can't give them away on the show. I'd love to. I'm not trying to bait you. I just can't do it. If I read some of these titles, you wouldn't believe how good they are. Look at this. I can't wait to read them myself. What is this? Oh, no. Come on. This is so timely. It's frightening. Wait a minute now. What is this one? Hold on now. I can't get... Wait. Oh, no! Come on! I'm going to read you a line, I swear to God. This is called The Molester, or Innocence the Aphrodisia. This book, this small story or novella was written, I don't even know the year, I can't find the year, but I'm going to read you a line, and then I've got to stop because I'm shocked by what I have here. Are you ready for this? It's about a football player who turns out to be a molester. Or is it about a coach who turns out to be a molester of boys? Yes, and it's a sergeant who's on his trail. How did I write that so many years ago? I don't know. I don't know what it has to do with anything else, but I just can't believe this. Because it's so timely, it's shocking.
It's written in the words of a chief inspector who says, I first came into this case when the chief inspector called me to piece together this battered body of that boy you read about, Joey Adams. They found him in pieces, his skull a jigsaw only the demented bastard who took him apart could figure out. It was a sexual abuser who took him. Not your money-sick kidnapper, but the truly sick. The pathologs you pass every day, in the bank, at the supermarket, at the office. The crazy sons of bees who pass for normal are usually the worst mutilators. At least that's been my observation here at the morgue in the lower basement of Buena Vista Hospital. Sergeant, Thursday in the morning, the sergeant bellowed down the stairs, Hal, they've just found another one. Well, there it is. And he's a forensic anthropologist, this cop. The muscles tensed in his jaws and neck, the old footballer getting ready to squash the other player, probably from Stanford. Johnson stamping the good old dirt of Berkeley like a native black bull, which he was. See, it's very good stuff. Written maybe 25 years ago. I have so many unpublished, rejected manuscripts that are exciting to me right now for a number of reasons. Because all of the editors whose rejection letters I have attached to the manuscripts are dead or gone, and I'm still here, I swear to you. All of the editors who rejected me 20 years ago, no one knows them, and they're all dead. And now the people who've taken their jobs are clamoring for my work. I want to live another 20 years. I've got to see this.
Savage.